Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Mike Herhold, president of the First Friday Club of Greater Akron. On behalf of myself and the First Friday Club board, I'd like to welcome you and thank you for coming to our April 2022 program. Special thanks to our major underwriter and sponsor, the Ohio Catholic Federal Credit Union. Our very special speaker for today is Coach Tom Arth. Please silence your cell phones so that we can all enjoy today's program. After the presentation, you'll have the opportunity to write down questions for our speaker. After the talk, we'll have a short announcement break to collect question cards and a question-answer session. It's now my pleasure to introduce Walsh Jesuit High School student Caroline Arth, who will offer our opening prayer.
Lord, we thank you for bringing us together in your name and ask that you bless our food and our fellowship as we draw closer to you during Lent. As we continue our prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, may we keep our eyes on the hill of Calvary as we anticipate the resurrection on Easter morning. May we live as people of the light, serving those in need. Bless us, O Lord, in these thy gifts, which we are about to receive from thy bounty, through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Thank you, Caroline. It's now my pleasure to introduce First Friday Club board member Carl Ertl, who will introduce our speaker.
Thank you, Mike. I'm not sure if you've been checking Twitter since you came in today, but the Browns released Deshaun Watson and have named Tom Arth as their new quarterback.
April Fools.
Today, the First Friday Club welcomes Mr. Tom Arth to address us. What an honor it is to tell you a little of the life of our speaker. And I begin by telling you that, most importantly, he is husband and father, a man of faith, a man of service. He and his loving wife, Lauren, are the proud parents of five children, two of whom are here today. Caroline, who just led us in prayer. Tommy, who came even on spring break from Seton. Kathleen, Patrick, and Elizabeth. And faith and family have always come first for the Arth family. Tom's Christ-like care for all he meets is what has made him so successful in his profession as a coach and molder of young people, as he cares for his team members in a deep way, helping them raise their GPAs, guiding them through personal crises, and helping them prepare for life beyond the football field. I've known Tom since he attended our Catholic parish grade school, and have been blessed to see him excel as the star quarterback of our high school alma mater, then at John Carroll, where he set 18 records. He was John Carroll's starting quarterback for 3 years through 2002, and earned unanimous All-America honors, both as a junior and senior, leading the Bruce Streaks to a berth in the NCAA D3 national semifinals for the first time in that program's history. His NFL career with the Colts, with Peyton Manning, has led to a strong friendship that exemplifies good men of character who make a difference in the world. After his NFL career, he played professionally in Europe, Canada, and the Arena League before he returned to University Heights to his alma mater in 2010. Tom then stepped up as head coach of John Carroll in 2013, guiding the team to the conference title, including a victory over rival and then number one ranked nationally, Mount Union, and he snapped the Raiders' 112-game winning streak. He was named National Coach of the Year for D3 schools in 2016. He later left John Carroll and served as head coach at Tennessee Chattanooga and right here in Akron at Akron U, spending 9 total seasons as a collegiate head football coach. And he will make his NFL coaching debut this September as the Los Angeles Chargers pass game specialist. Life has taught him many lessons, and we are honored to have Mr. Tom Arth with us today to reflect on faith and finding God in all things. Please welcome Tom Arth.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ertl. I still call him Mr. Ertl. It's just hard. It's hard not to. It really is an honor to be here with all of you today. I didn't know if this was going to happen. Mr. Ertl and I have been you know, talking about this, you know, for quite a while, at least a year and a half, and timing never quite worked out, and then we set this date, and next thing you know, I end up about a month ago or a month and a half ago now taking a job with the Los Angeles Chargers, and I really hesitated to make the call and say, you know what, I think I'm going to have to cancel. And for whatever reason, it worked out that this was our week off and I was able to be here. So, you know, really feel a very special honor to be here. And I think that it's important for me to share with you that, you know, since I've become a head coach the last 9 years, and I've had these opportunities to speak with people and to share whatever it is, you know, that's important that day and relative to the audience that, you know, that I'm addressing. And whenever I am asked to speak and whenever I have that opportunity, like, I always just kind of reflect a little bit and think, like, how special that is. And for any of you who have ever had the opportunity to get up in front of a group and to share your story, to have people who are interested in whatever it is that you have to say, or at least somebody, maybe Mr. Ertl is the only one in here, we'll find that out here soon, because I guess I have 30 minutes. I hope I don't put anybody to sleep. But it is, it's really a really special honor. And I think sometimes we don't always think about that. We don't always think about the responsibility that we have as a speaker, your time, you know, the commitment that you all made to be here. And I want you to know that I take that very personally. And I don't ever take this type of opportunity for granted. And I think it's, you know, it's a little bit of who I am. It's a little bit of like what my nature is. In everything that I do, I always try to be the best that I can be. I always try to give everything that I have to what I'm doing in that moment. And, you know, that's a lesson that I learned, you know, at John Carroll University. Father Casey Bukala, who, you know, taught three of my philosophy classes, married my wife Lauren and I, baptized most of our children. You know, he always used to say, there was a Jewish rabbi, I don't know who he was, but he used to say, when he passed away at his funeral ceremony, they asked his son, what was the most important thing to your father? And what he said was that which he was doing in the moment. And that always, like, resonated with me. And that always just, it had such a profound impact on me. And to just think about that for a second, especially, like, you younger people here, you know, high school students, like, just think about if you attacked everything in your life with that mindset and that mentality. Like, whatever you're doing in the moment is the most important thing to you. Like, think about that. Think about that when you're in math class. Think about that when, you know, you're out on the field, like, playing your sport. Right? Or in the gym, like, playing your sport, like, whatever you're doing, like, when you're with your family, when you're with your friends, if you take every moment and you approach every moment like it is the most important thing to you, think about what you can accomplish, right? How you have to challenge yourself in that way, right? When you go into class and you say, you know what, I'm going to be the best student that has ever come to this class. I will take better notes than anybody else. I walk into the weight room, like, this is going to be the best rep I have ever had because it's the most important thing to me. I think there's something that is really special in that. And, you know, that's how I feel about opportunities like this. It's very important to me, you know, to, you know, that you all understand that this matters and that I hope that I'll be able to share something with you that, you know, that resonates, that you can take with you, maybe that you learn from, or maybe that's, you know, relevant in your lives or something that you can apply. But, you know, I think that it's important for me to sort of set the stage and just, you know, kind of let everybody know, like, I'm a really competitive person and it is truly an honor to be a part of this group. You know, and kind of looking back at some of the speakers that have been asked to be a part of this, certainly the speaker who's coming next month, you know, there's some really special people who have had the opportunity to address this group. And I sure hope that I can live up to that. Competition is something that's very important to me. And, you know, you look at it and, you know, for me, the definition that I have of competition is the relentless intensity you have to be your best all the time. And the confidence to know that your best is better than the competition's. Like, that's my personal definition of it. And I spent a lot of time thinking about that. Back in 2000, and after the 2017 season, my first year at Chattanooga, like, in that winter time, you always go back as a coach, and you always reflect. Another, you know, principle that I learned In my 8 years of Jesuit education and the 7 years that I spent working at a Jesuit institution, like being able to reflect, right, and discern, like, what is happening, what has happened, where do we need to go in the future to improve? You take that time in the winter and you think about, okay, well, what was that season like? You think about, what are all the things that we did well? What are all the areas that we can improve in? Were there scheme errors? Were there coaching errors, personnel errors? But most importantly, what you try to identify is, what is that thing that is most important? The one thing that we can all focus on that is most important for you and for your team, for your organization, to take the biggest step forward, to improve the most. What is that one thing? And following that 2017 season, it was about competing, right? Because a lot of people, and again, I'm so glad there's some high school students here, because like, I think this is so important for you. How many athletes in the room? Right? Like, we all think about competing in terms of, like when we're competing in our sport. Right? But did you notice part of that definition I have? Like, it's the relentless intensity you have to compete all the time. The relentless intensity you have to be your best all the time. Right? Like, being competitive, it's a lifestyle. It's not something that you just get to pick and choose when you want to do it. You're either competitive or you're not. It's just like leadership. You're either a leader or you're not. If you say you're a leader on your team and you go out there and you play well on game day, right, and you're kind of that vocal guy or vocal girl out there on the court, like, you better be that same leader in the classroom. You better be that same leader in the community, because it's all the time. Right? It's all the time. Right, so I think that's really important, and you look at that, and understanding that, like, taking that approach to everything that you do is such an important part of being successful. And I certainly think that's important for me to share with all of you, so you just have a little bit of an idea of where I'm coming from, and the type of energy and the type of spirit that I have around all these things that I'm going to talk about today. Thank you again for this opportunity to be here. I'm very excited to have this chance to spend some time with you. I'm going to introduce Mr. Ertl. Did a great job. He recognized my daughter Caroline and Tommy, who are here with us today. But I just want to share a little bit about you, share a little bit with you about my family, because I think it's just hard to really begin anything, to have an understanding of who I am without knowing that. Who my family is as well. As Mr. Ertl said, it's such an important part of me. It's everything to me, is my family. And I'm so proud of these two and Caroline. I wasn't going to do this, but I think sometimes when you get in front of a group, being able to recognize people and being able to sort of honor them and some of the things that they've done, I think is really important. Public recognition, I think we all really appreciate. So, really glad that Caroline and Tommy are both here. And, Caroline is an exceptional student, at Walsh Jesuit High School that she loves, with her friends that came with her today. And she's just so self-motivated and driven. And it's really exciting. And it gives me so much pride as a father to see the work that she puts in and how important it is for her to be her best, to do her best every single day as a student. And Tommy, the same way, maybe not quite, in terms of like his best to be the student, we're working on that. But what I'm so proud of Tommy is just the person that he is. And I hate to get, it's hard for me to talk about family. I always get a little bit choked up, but we have two children with special needs, Kate and Patrick. They're kind of right in the middle, 12 and 10, and like just the way that Tommy is with them. Sorry, the way that they look up to him, the way he treats them, his empathy, the type of person he is very special, and he's like that with everybody. And it's it's something that that I'm really proud of. So I just wanted to share that with in front of both of them, so they know. I think they do know. I've told them that, but to be able to share that with all of you, really means a lot to me. So you've met Tommy and Caroline. I mentioned Kate and Patrick, who are both incredible, and I think sometimes actually at our at the homily last week at St. Mary's Parish in Hudson. The priest, obviously the gospel was the prodigal son and his return, and our priest really attacked it from the idea of, the older son, and really, his lack of gratitude, his lack of appreciation for what he has. And I think, that, really, made a lot of sense to me. And I think that's something that, when you look at a family and you look at our two children with special needs, it's really easy to look at all the challenges. It's really easy to look at all the, the different things that pull at you, the different sacrifices, and figuring out, like, okay, well, where do you need to live so they have the best special ed programs, just the different, for Patrick, he also has Crohn's disease, all these challenges he has to go through, and doctor appointments, surgeries, all the stress that it puts on your family. But, think about, the blessings that they bring. And, what's so special about the two of them is that their greatest challenges are also what their greatest strengths. It's what makes them so unique. It's what makes them so special and what draws people to them. They have incredible personalities. JP knows. JP's one of Tommy's best friends at Seton Catholic. He knows Kate and Patrick very well, and Patrick lights up every time he sees JP. And they just have this way of bringing the best out in people. And I think that's so special. And then we have our youngest, Lizzie. We have our youngest Lizzie. She's our six-year-old. She's a firecracker. You just really can't rein her in. And she has this opportunity to really look up to both Caroline and Tommy. But then she's only six. Kate and Patrick are 12 and 10. But she's like the caretaker of Kate and Patrick, and she kind of keeps them in line to a certain degree. I don't know what she's going to be like 4 or 5 years from now. I'm sure we're going to have our hands full. She's probably most like me, as all of them. So I'm sure we'll be getting a lot of calls from her teachers and the principals of her school down the road. And then, lastly, and I got to get moving here. I do this. I get going on different things. But lastly, my wife, Lauren, who, obviously wasn't able to be here with us today. She's taking care of, three younger kids. Which is, kind of what she does. And, I think about it all the time and all the sacrifices. Coaches that are here know the sacrifices that families make when someone, their dad or their mom are coaching. The sacrifices are incredible. And my wife certainly makes those. And she does an amazing job raising our kids and supporting me and supporting all of us through everything, through all the highs, through all the lows, through the moves. We've moved from the west side of Cleveland to the east side of Cleveland, which I will tell you is the toughest move she's ever had to make. We both grew up on the west side. When we moved out to University Heights, that was the hardest move I have ever experienced. I kid you not. But from, Cleveland to Chattanooga, Tennessee, back to Akron, now all the way out to Southern California, which, by the way, we must be the only family in America that would choose to spend spring break in Northeast Ohio when we could be in Southern California. I still can't figure that out. I walk off the plane and it's snowing, it's freezing, and I'm like, golly, I just left 65 and sunny every single day, and we're all sitting here freezing inside. But, through it all, Lauren is just such an incredibly supportive mother and wife, and really kind of keeps it all together for us. We give her a hard time at times, but I know deep down inside we truly appreciate what she does for our family. So thanks for allowing me to do that. But now really kind of getting into this thing and what I want to share with you. Where am I at with the time? I probably got like 2 minutes left.
2 minutes left.
But because I do want to leave time for questions. I really enjoy answering questions. But, you know, I think, you know, again, as a speaker, you always kind of think about like who is your audience and what can you really share? You know, how do you deliver something that's valuable and worthwhile? And obviously, you know, this group being a group of, you know, of Catholic people of faith, you know, many students, teachers, administrators in Catholic education. You know, what I really want to do is share with you how my faith has been shaped through my education without me even knowing it. And it goes back, you know, really like to Mr. Ertl. And I can like honestly stand up here and say this, like I would not be where I am. I would not be standing here today if it wasn't for Mr. Ertl. And I've told my kids that. They know that. Mr. Ertl was the director of admissions when I was growing up. And like I said, like my youngest Lizzie, she's probably going to be like me. Like I got my mom got a lot of calls. Like my poor mom, like every night, like we get, like we never get calls on our kids. Like every now and then, maybe this one over here. Right. And it's like, so like, I mean like so aggravating and so frustrating, right. And so disappointing. Every single day, my mom was getting calls from me. I was a marginal, and I say that like that is a stretch. I was a marginal student. I was constantly screwing around. I wasn't like a bad kid, but I was in trouble all the time. And I really wasn't even that good of a football player at that point, like I thought I was in my mind. But I told my sixth grade teacher, like, we went around the room and we had to tell, like, what's our dream? What's our goal? And I told my sixth grade teacher at St. Richard's, I said, I'm gonna be the starting quarterback at St. Ignatius High School. Now, I didn't even say I want to play in the NFL. Like, I didn't even say I want to be a quarterback in the NFL. I just said, I want to be the starting quarterback at St. Ignatius High School. The whole class eroded in laughter, like erupted in laughter, including the teacher. So I wasn't even a good football player, yet somehow, Mr. Ertl made like my dream a reality. I don't know why, because I really shouldn't have gotten into St. Ignatius. My dad, his two older brothers, they went to St. Ed's. My grandpa went to Ignatius, so I did have a legacy, but, you know, like, not that strong. But Mr. Ertl, you know, gave me that opportunity, you know, to really, at that point in my life, like, live, like, my greatest dream, which was being a student at St. Ignatius High School and, you know, ultimately becoming the starting quarterback at St. Ignatius High School, which, for me, even at this point in my life, is one of my most proud accomplishments. I would have a hard time telling you that it meant more to me to play in the NFL than it did to become the starting quarterback at St. Ignatius. And, you know, and I go back to St. Ignatius a lot because that's really where, like, everything changed for me in a lot of ways, and probably not when I was a student there. Probably should have been thrown out after my freshman year. I think maybe I just had a likability about me. I don't know what it was, but Mr. Hennessy, our dean of students, you know, I think he believed in me in that point, let me come back. And, you know, but you're there, and it was just such an incredible experience for me. And I use that word experience because, like, that's exactly what it was. I think we throw that word out there all the time, but this was an experience. Like, it was so powerful. It was holistic. You know, and you don't even know what's happening. Like, that's what's so incredible about it. And you're going through this, and here I am, you know, whatever, 14 years old, freshman, till whatever, I was 17, 18 as a senior, and I'm with 1,500 boys every single day. And it's like, if you imagine, like, okay, like, we all go over to our friend's house, there's like 10 of us, right? Multiply that by like 150. Like, that's what it felt like every single day to me. But what we were is we were surrounded by these incredible men and women of faith, right? Our teachers, our coaches, right? The faculty and staff, all these people who were like so in love with St. Ignatius High School, who were so in love with their faith and who shared it with you in these incredible ways that you didn't even realize it was happening. And honestly, like it wasn't until I graduated from St. Ignatius. I'm walking across
the stage at John Carroll University in front of Kulas Auditorium, and I'm shaking Father Welsh's hand like the first time it hits you, right? In the words of the alma mater, right? How that alma mater finishes, we're Ignatius men forever as we hail the blue and gold. Like those words, right, kind of come to me. Like, you know what? Like, that's what it is. And all that time growing up, all I ever thought about was, boy, like Ignatius, this is place, like, all I know is like the people that come out of that, they're so successful. They do so well. They so many great football players, right? But then when you graduate from St. Ignatius and all of a sudden you go someplace else, it carries with you for the rest of your life. And everything that I learned that I didn't even realize I was learning, when I went to John Carroll University, it all came with me. It all came with me. And all I wanted to do was represent St. Ignatius, right? To represent my coaches, my teachers, what I learned in my time there, how I could be the best player, how I could be the best teammate, how I could be the best student for John Carroll University. And I was very fortunate. We were able to, you know, have some great teams. I had great personal success. As Mr. Ertl mentioned, my senior year, we, you know, went 12-2, you know, finished number 3 in the country that year, and you know, had an opportunity to go play in the National Football League, to go play for the Indianapolis Colts and with Peyton Manning, which was another dream of mine that had the opportunity to come through. But, you know, it all goes back to, you know, what I learned at St. Ignatius. And, you know, I am going to share a couple stories about Peyton Manning and, you know, Brett Favre and my time, you know, in Indianapolis and Green Bay, because I know that's always a popular topic. But I'm going to do it quickly, you know, and I think, you know, what I want to share about Peyton is he is exactly who you know him to be. Everybody know Peyton Manning? Make sure, right? We know him, right? We know him from Saturday Night Live. We know him from the commercials, the Monday Night Football broadcast now. He is that, right? He is that type of person. He has that type of personality. So there are a lot of stories. There are a lot of stories about Peyton, believe me. But what I want to share with you is I want you all to know that he also was that person that you remember from Sundays in the fall, right? That same person you remember from post-game press conferences, win or lose, no matter how he played, right? That person from his retirement speech, his Hall of Fame induction speech, he's also that person, right? One of the most genuine, one of the most humble people you could ever be around. Hardest workers, right? Hardest working person I've ever been around. And that's rare. When you have somebody with that type of talent who outworks everybody, those are the results. And, you know, to have had the opportunity to be with him and to share that competitive space with him for 3 seasons, like, meant everything to me. You know, certainly watching him on Sundays, but more importantly, watching him in the meeting room, watching him in the weight room, watching him on the practice field, his approach to everything that he did. Right, kind of goes back to like that, what you're doing in the moment is the most important thing to you. You can't tell the difference between a walkthrough and the Super Bowl when you're looking at Peyton. Right, and that's the type of person he is. So, you know, and I think we all kind of have a sense of that. But, you know, you all know about his work ethic. You all know about the way he prepared his football intelligence. And I can just tell you, you know, you want to multiply that by about 100 as well. And that'll get you somewhere close to like what his capabilities actually are. You know, relative to Brett Favre, you know, in fairness, didn't get a chance to meet Brett Favre. Didn't get to know Brett Favre as well as Peyton. I wasn't there as long, and really the majority of the time I was in Green Bay, you know, Brett was kind of back and forth between do I retire, do I come back, if you guys all remember that. You know, but majority of my time was actually with Aaron Rodgers, and it was the first year in the new offense for Aaron. It was his second year in the league. We were the only 2 quarterbacks there. And every single day, like, we were competing back and forth, like, every single day in the weight room, in the meeting room, out on the field, like, challenging one another back and forth. And it was really, like, one of the most special times of my life. You know, just the ability that I think that we had to bring the best out in each other. Certainly for me, it was the best that I had ever performed at the NFL level and had so much fun doing it. But Brett came back sometime in OTAs. We were probably in May, somewhere in there, towards the end of OTAs. And he literally, so, you know, Aaron and I are out there, you know, whatever, we're practicing. And all of a sudden, a golf cart rolls up. So if you guys know about Green Bay, you ever hear about they have to ride bikes from the stadium over to the practice field in training camp? Well, you know, Brett got driven over in a golf cart. And he gets off the golf cart, and he comes walking out onto the field, and he's still wearing, like, golf shorts, khaki shorts. He's got a polo shirt on with his jersey, his red jersey, over top of it. And I'm about 90% sure that he was wearing a Rolex. And he literally, I kid you not, he walks straight out onto the field from the golf cart, walks right into the huddle, you know, calls a four vertical play, you know, something, you know, zebra right open, F nudge, three jet, all go, whatever, right? Something like that. Walks in, calls the play, goes under center, okay? He didn't warm up. He walked off the golf cart right into the huddle, calls this four vertical play. He's under center, takes a five-step drop. He stared, right, four vertical. So we got four guys, two guys on each side, running straight, right, running down the field straight, okay? And he drops back, and he is staring, okay, at the seam on his right. Quick five-step drop. He hits the back foot and fires a no-look pass to the seam on the left. No look, okay? And it strikes his tight end in the helmet, like in his hands, like just over the top of the linebacker dropping the seam, just over his fingertips and right in front of the safety playing on the hash. The most unbelievable thing I ever saw. I was with Peyton for the last 3 years. I had never seen anything like that. Like, unbelievable. And it's like, okay, well, this is different. This is Brett Favre. And, you know, and that's what he was. He was such a polar opposite of Peyton. Such the polar opposite of Peyton, but ultimately so successful. And, like, where I was so impressed with him was just, like, the way that he approached the game and why his teammates loved him so much was because he had this, you know, boy-like approach to the game. He had so much fun. He was so exuberant in how he played. And his teammates just rallied around that. And it was so special, you know, to have a chance to, you know, to see that. And, you know, and that kind of leads me to, you know, football ending for me. You know, Caroline and Tommy were young. You know, they were actually, you know, got to see a little bit of when I was in the Arena League in Canada. They were around. But then, you know, I was coming back to Cleveland to go play for the Gladiators, and the Arena League folded. And, you know, you're sitting there and you're like, all right, well, now what do I do? Like, nobody's calling me. Nobody really wants me. Like, I'm not ready to stop playing. Like, I don't have, like, the words, like, quit, like, aren't in my vocabulary. Like, I'm not doing it. But, you know, I think at every point, like, you have to be able to make a sacrifice. And for me, it was for my family. All right, we have two kids at the time. We, you know, just bought a home in Lakewood. And it's like, you know what? Like, I have responsibilities, and I need to go, like, I need to figure out, like, what I'm going to do and how I'm going to support my family. And so, you know, never in my life did I think about anything other than playing football. Had no idea what I wanted to do. Never thought about it, you know, which leads me to another point. Don't have a plan B. People always say, well, what's your plan B? Don't have a plan B. Plan B gives you an excuse. It gives you an out. Like, it allows you to quit when things get tough. Because if you got really high dreams and you have really high goals and aspirations and things you want to accomplish in your life, you don't have room for a plan B. Because you'll quit. Because it's going to be really, really hard. And people are going to tell you that you can't do it along the way. And if you got this other thing that you can do, that's going to make you happy, like, you'll go and do it. But if you don't have a plan B, like, you're going to stick it out and you're going to fight. And a lot of times in football, in life, it's just about the guy that keeps getting up. Just about the person that just keeps showing up every single day. I was one of 13 quarterbacks my freshman year at St. Ignatius. One of 13. I was 11th on the depth chart. Guess what? 10 of those guys quit before we probably even got to our junior year. By the time I got to my junior year, there were three of us. Mike Kelly, Mike Carfagna, and myself. Mike got moved to DB. Mike Carfagna got moved to DB, and it was just Mike Kelly and I. Right? Like, who can hang in there? Right? And that's so much what life is. right? So don't have a plan B. I didn't. But I went back to John Carroll. Again, Jesuit roots. All right, go back. You know, Coach DiCarlo didn't coach me, but always respected him, had a great relationship with him. He always helped his players find jobs, start career opportunities. He put me in touch with his son, who started a company not too long before that in Cleveland. They didn't have a job, but they brought me in and said they, you know, kind of connect me with some people that could help. So I went in, spent a Friday with them. By the time it all finished up, I had a job offer. They created a position for me, allowed me, you know, to be in this business, this very exciting young entrepreneurial company where I had an opportunity to really grow and develop in their business. And I went and I did that for a year. And, you know, I did that for a year and, you know, was loving it. Absolutely loving it, loving the people I worked for, loved the vision of our company, was learning so much about leadership, was learning so much about communicating and interacting with people and building teams and all of those sorts of things. But something was missing in my life, and I didn't know it at the time. But my head coach from John Carroll called me, Coach Scaife, who I learned so much from, and offered me a job coaching at John Carroll. It was really the first time in my life that I ever thought about it, first time I ever thought about coaching. When I was in Indianapolis, two men that I have the utmost respect for, Tony Dungy and Jim Caldwell, both used to tell me all the time, like, "Tom, you're going to be a great coach someday." Like, it used to make me so mad. It used to make me so mad. I wouldn't even listen to it. It's like, stop telling me how good of a coach I'm going to be. Tell me I'm going to be like a good quarterback. Tell me I'm going to make this team. Like, I don't want to coach. I want to play. Right? But that was like the first time that I really thought about it. And what I realized was that football, outside of my faith, outside of my family, football had always been like that most important driving force in my life. And all of a sudden, it wasn't there. It wasn't there with me. And it makes me really think about, like, okay, like, I love what I'm doing. I love the people that I'm working with. But, like, is this really what God had planned for me? Is this really what my life's going to look like for the next 40 years? Is this what, like, I want my kids to look up to? And there's nothing wrong with it. But it just wasn't for me. It wasn't for me. And, you know, I decided to go and take that job and turn down, you know, what I thought at that point was a really great opportunity in business. And I turned it down and I go back to John Carroll and, you know, I'm there for 3 years as an assistant coach. And during that time, you know, what hits me is, you know, after the seasons, like, I'm talking to players, you know, players are coming up to me and, you know, or they're texting me or they're coming and sitting in my office and they're just telling me, like, how much it meant to them that I came back to John Carroll and what an impact I made on their life and their career and how the things that they learned from me, just watching me with my family, the type of coach I was, the type of leader that I was, like how that was going to like really help them in their lives. And it was at that point where I really realized, like, I came back here to coach football because I missed the game that I love, right, that it meant so much to me. But what I realized is this is what I was put on this earth to do. Like, this was God's plan for me. This was an opportunity that I had to make an impact, right? To change lives. And, like, that has always stuck with me. And you think about it, and it's like, why did that take me so long? Why did it take me all that time to realize that what those young men were telling me and sharing with me and what, like, occurred to me, it's what I was taught the first day I stepped foot on campus in summer enrichment program at St. Ignatius High School. Like, to be a man with and for others. To be willing to give everything of myself to serve something greater. To help bring the best out in the people who I'm around. Like, why did that take me so long? And everything came full circle. And I really, that experience of being a coach at John Carroll, I think really, like, it brought me so much closer to my faith. For whatever reason that it was, maybe being, you know, sort of a leader of that type of program in that type of environment, and maybe having that ability to recognize, like, what my faith is, what my purpose is. Is that my time limit?
Yeah.
Dang. I got this ability. It's probably the best thing about me not being a head coach anymore. Our players don't have to, like, listen to me go on and on, off on tangents. Do I need to stop?
No.
Do I have, like, maybe five more minutes?
Okay, you can take five.
Okay. Okay, I'll get it quick. So I was, you know, assistant for 3 years, and you know, had this, you know, was very fortunate to be able to realize kind of young in my career, like, okay, like, this is what I'm here for. This is why I do what I do. And, you know, and then you go into it and you say, okay, I become the head coach in 2000, right at the end of 2012, heading into the 2013 season. And, you know, I was so fortunate because I kind of knew my purpose. And now at that point in the head coaching cycle in college, it's really like that winter time when you get hired, there's no students on campus. Everybody's home. Everybody's on break. So I had this time to really think about how do I take that purpose and how do I build a culture around that? And, you know, and I, that's what I spent my time thinking about and, you know, and really like coming up with a vision for our program, right? And like when I say vision, I'm talking big picture. Like at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, like what are we looking to accomplish? And you talk to a lot of coaches, you talk to a lot of athletic directors, and they're going to tell you like graduating, winning, like that's what it is. Like when it's all said and done, like that's all that matters. Do they graduate? Do you win? Right? And that might be true. Like that's how the world judges us. That's how the world judges us. That's how you all judge us. Right? Is do we win? Right? Probably, if we're being honest, that's probably what most people care about. Right? You're being honest. Right? Do you win? Right? And like, yeah. Like, that's all important. It all matters, right? Don't get it twisted. I don't want anybody walking out of here thinking, like, okay, this guy doesn't care about winning and losing. No, but that's everybody's goal. Like, what's our separation factor? Isn't that just the expectation? Like, why would that be the vision for our program? That's just the expectation. So for me, our vision was always tied to my faith. Our vision was always tied to my purpose. Whether I was at John Carroll University, Catholic school, or whether I was at state institutions, Tennessee, University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, or University of Akron, right? It was always tied to like what I felt my purpose was. And our vision was to prepare our graduates to be successful, to be leaders, to make a difference in the world, right? To create lasting relationships, memories, and experiences that are going to change their lives forever. Like, that's the vision, right? And then you kind of find from there, okay, well, that's the big picture. When it's all said and done, like, what type of husbands, what type of fathers are walking out of here? How are these student athletes, are they graduating and going out in the world? And are they successful? Are they serving their communities? Are they involved? Are they making the world a better place? Like, those are the questions that matter. Like, that's what God cares about. God doesn't care about how many games you win. God didn't put me on this earth to play football. He didn't put me on this earth to coach football. Right? He put me on this earth to use what I'm passionate about as a platform to affect people, right? To affect change and to make the world a better place, like one individual, one player, one interaction at a time, right? And like, how do you manifest that every single day? That's what we did. That was what our mission was, right? That was the next step, right? Our mission to create the most competitive, right? The most exciting learning environment, to challenge our players every single day to be their best, right? And you think about mission. You ever hear the phrase like, man, like, he's on a mission. Like, that person is on a mission. Like, what does that mean? Like, what does that conjure up in your mind? Right? It's somebody with, like, an incredible sense of purpose. Somebody who's moving fast. Right? Who's on fire all the time. Like, working towards this goal. You are on a mission. Right? So that was my mission every single day. Every person in our program's mission every single day is how do we create this competitive environment, this exciting learning environment that challenges our players every day to give everything that they have, no matter what they're doing. I'm not talking about football. I'm not talking about school. I'm talking about whatever they're doing, in that moment, in the classroom, on the practice field, in the weight room, serving in the community, interacting with their families, right? To be the best that they can be. Like, that's what it's about for me, right? Because again, it's all tied to the purpose, right? And then the last piece of it was like our way, like the culture of our program. And this goes back again to, you know, when I became the head coach at John Carroll, it's like, okay, well, like what's our program going to be about? Like, I've read a lot of leadership books, did a lot of different things, but it's like, you know what, we're at John Carroll University. It's a Jesuit institution. Jesuits, you know, if you read the book Heroic Leadership, it's a business book by Chris Lowney. I highly recommend it. It really talks about the Jesuits as a business, and you know, they built the most successful school system in the history of the world, like over 450 years of sustained success. Like, why would I look any further? Right? And it came to, you know, came down to like our way, Nuestro Modo. right, at John Carroll that I've been able to carry with me everywhere that I've been. And what that means to me, the way that we've kind of defined it in our program, and all that we ask our players to think about, and all that we ask our players to do, we don't ask them to win, we don't ask them to get great grades, we just ask them to live this way, like immerse yourself in this culture of our way, right, which is to passionately commit to a standard of excellence, to relentlessly believe in yourself and your teammates and your coaches, and to have a tireless will. Have a tireless will to win, to compete, to win, and to consistently perform to the best of your God-given ability. Like every single day. If we can live up to that, like how successful we all can be, you know, in our lives. And that's what it was. And for the last 9 years, I've had that opportunity every single day. I've had that opportunity every single day to wake up with 125 players, right? All the coaches, the staff, and all of their families literally counting on me every single day to be the best that I can be for them. And that's a responsibility that I took so much pride in. And it's honestly, it's one of the hardest challenges I have now is not being that person. Not being a head coach anymore. I'm now an assistant coach. I'm this low-level guy, right? And, you know, kind of starting his career in the National Football League. But I'll tell you this, and I'm closing it out. You know, my mission, my vision doesn't change. It's the same, no matter where I go. My responsibilities as a leader are the same. I may not have as many people counting on me directly every single day, but I got my family, and I have a responsibility to every single person who I do have the opportunity to interact with, to make our organization the best that it can be, right? To change whatever life I have the opportunity to change, whoever I have the chance to interact with, I have that same responsibility, right? And again, from Heroic Leadership, one of my favorite quotes about leadership. Leadership is not about, okay, the magnitude of the opportunity. It's about the magnitude of the response, how you respond in those moments. And I kind of screwed that up a little bit. But you understand the point. So for me, like, that's what I live by now. Right? No matter what the opportunity is, whether I'm a head coach, whether I'm an assistant, whatever it is, every interaction I have, every opportunity I have to lead and to serve, right, and to show my faith through my actions, not through my words, but through my actions, to be able to have that effect on people is, you know, what drives me. And, you know, again, I appreciate the opportunity to share that all with you. And I think at the end of the day, you know, with this group, I would just like to say thank you. I know there's so many teachers and coaches, you know, from Catholic schools, you know, in this area. I know Hoban and Walsh Jesuit are here. I'm not sure if anyone from St. Vincent, St. Mary. I see St. Mary Catholic School is here. And I want to thank the teachers. I want to thank the coaches for what you do, for your lives, and the commitment that you make to make this world a better place, for teaching, coaching, and educating my children and all of the children in this community. Thank you to all of you, some of you here who may support Catholic education, and for creating those opportunities for young people to experience some of those same things that I have had, because it has meant everything to me in my life. And it's why, like, we are invested in our family. And whatever it costs in California to put them through Catholic education, a lot more than it is here, we're going to pay it because of what it does for our lives. So thank you so much.
Well, if we're not all motivated to jump right on our plan A, then you haven't been in this room. So, want to thank Coach Tom again for that inspiring presentation. First Friday Club, our next luncheon will be here on May 6th. Well, first of all, if you have questions, get those written down and hold them up, and one of our board members will pick them up. If you have any questions, please write those down. Our next meeting, luncheon, will be here on Friday, May 6th, with a presentation by Cleveland Guardians Senior Vice President for Public Affairs, Bob DiBiasio. If you happen to be listening to our podcast, you can send a check for $20 to First Friday Club, 795 Russell Avenue, Akron 44307. You can call 330-535-7668 each month, or go to our website at Eventbrite. Reservations need to be made a week prior to the meeting. We have a lot of good speakers lined up for the rest of the year and next year. Please check our website. I'd like to do some recognitions. If you're here for the first time, please raise your hand. If you're a first-time attendee, want to recognize students from Archbishop Hoban and Walsh Jesuit High Schools. Want to recognize students from St. Mary Elementary. Then I'd like to recognize our board members, give a wave, and our office manager, Carol Scout. Now I'm going to introduce our First Friday Club Vice President, Deacon Will Yoho, who will handle the questions. So come on back up, Coach.
See, that was my strategy. I thought I could use all the time. And I wouldn't get any tough questions. But no, kidding.
All right. All right, this might be a little loaded question, and I think... Who is your favorite child?
The golden child. Well, Caroline's not in here right now.
But it was one of her friends that asked.
Yeah. It's like picking plays in a game plan. Like, you can't be hard to narrow down.
Good answer. Good answer. How can Akron U successfully recruit when they're competing with Ohio State, Cincinnati, Kent State?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think Akron is positioned very well in the recruiting landscape, where they really need to compete and be successful. They don't need to compete against Ohio State. They're not going to compete against Ohio State for recruits. They're really kind of in a different hemisphere. Really who they're competing with are more of the Kent States and the MAC schools in general, Toledo and Miami of Ohio, OU specifically. It's a very competitive landscape with so many schools. Outside of Texas, I believe Ohio has the most Division I football programs in the country. So it's extremely competitive, but the University of Akron is really it's an outstanding place with so many incredible people that I was so fortunate to have the opportunity to work with. It's a great campus. They've done a really fantastic job building that campus, and there's some outstanding academic programs. And I think the most important thing that University of Akron can do is to really market what they have to offer. You know, business programs, Sales Institute, just a lot of people don't know about it. And when you're competing against Miami of Ohio, when you're competing against OU, some really high academic schools, I think it's important to put your best foot forward. And I think that's an area, for sure, where they can continue to grow.
Tom, can I get your email, TK Griffith?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, TK. See me after.
And question from me, in the football coaching arena, it's an up and down, it's a move. How do you count on your faith in those times, or even in your football career when nobody was calling? How does your faith come into play?
Yeah, I think, very much so. I think it would be very difficult to be successful, really in anything, truly successful. And anything that you do in life without faith. But, I think faith, certainly played a major impact in my life. And, you know, belief in yourself. And I think that that comes from God. You know, that was the one thing that I think, set me apart. And, you know, again, I don't know where it comes from. Just like anything else that, our talents, whatever, comes from mom, dad, and God. And, that belief that was inside of me was something that was like incredibly like unwavering. So no matter, what the circumstance was, no matter what the situation was, like I always have a really steadfast belief in myself, that ultimately, I will be very successful. And I think when you're in it for the right reasons, you go through highs and lows, in this profession, and certainly I went through the lows of the lows at Akron. But I will also tell you that it was one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. And I say that, completely honestly. It really was, again, because of what's important to me, what's truly important to me, and to see the development and the impact and the lives that you're changing of people who really needed it. Kids at John Carroll, they were probably going to be all right, with or without Tom Arth. But, when you have the opportunity to coach and lead young people who may not have the same type of foundation, and to see their change and their growth and what they become is exceptionally rewarding. And I have yet to have a more rewarding experience than I've had at Akron.
Awesome. Great. Thank you very much. Very inspiring.
Thank you.
Yes. In your talk and everything, you mentioned your love for St. Ignatius, Jesuits, Cleveland. Now you're going to go to the West Coast. And I noticed in your bio, you changed so many places and everything. What if, let's say, the Browns or someone else offered you a job? Would you come back or what?
I would love to. Yeah, I would.
I mean, that's a long way out in the West Coast.
It is. It is a very long way. It is a very long way. But yeah, it is. It's awesome. It's obviously it's a huge lifestyle change, and really such a big cultural change for my family. But we've been through it, and it's not easy.
And I understand the money situation. Don't get me wrong.
Well. Yeah, there's not much of that. By the time those California taxes hit in and you got to pay for living and Catholic education, it's expensive. But you know what? I'll say this. It's really hard. It's such a tough place to be. And you really try to balance your career aspirations with, like, your family. And maybe I just tell myself this, and maybe I justify some of the decisions I make, but like I feel really proud because what my kids get a chance to see from me every day and what they get a chance to learn from me every day is that, okay, here's my dad, and like he's doing what he loves, and he's being able to provide a great lifestyle for us, doing what he loves. And more importantly, he's like making people's lives better. He's impacting young people. And I know that they get a chance to see that. And for me, I feel like that's a great example that I can give, my kids, is to say, like, listen, like, there's a lot of things you can do. There's a lot of different things that I can do. But there's nothing that I'm going to be as passionate about. There's nothing that I'm going to have as strong of a platform to, like, make the impact and to live my purpose and the reason why I feel my calling and why God put me on this earth as I can as a football coach. So I think they sort of understand that, as difficult as it is at times. But I do think it's it's an opportunity for me to be an example for them. And what I hope they find in their adult lives is, an opportunity to do what they love, as long as it has a chance to impact the world and make the world a better place. Like, I think we're all for it.
Awesome.
All right, thank you, everybody.
It's now my pleasure to introduce Walsh Jesuit student Olivia Volavik, who will offer our closing prayer.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Lord, we thank you for this time together and pray that you continue to bless Mr. Arth and his family. Thank you for adult leaders who model the faith for we young people, and may we follow in their example as we live our vocation as Christians. We pray in a special way for all who join together here today. Bless our good work as we work for your greater glory in all we do. May we now go into the world to light it on fire as we pray for peace in our hearts, our nation, and especially in Ukraine. We ask this in your holy name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Olivia. Again, we look forward to seeing everyone here next month on May 6th. Young folks or anyone else, please make sure you grab some of the desserts. There's still plenty out on the table, so take some of those with you.